Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. We're back on your TV screens and back in your hearts. That is a wrap on the 2025 PGA Tour season. Rex, you were there for it all at the RSM Classic reporting for Golf Central. How were the vibes on Sea Island last week and most particularly on Sunday?
Covered all 15 RSM classics and have, or 16 now, and have never had weather like that. I will say that it was as good as a weather week as you're going to get. It will, I'll tell you, Thursday and Friday's weather actually made the officials, Davis Love III, the host of the event, nervous because they knew there was going to be a 59. Doug Kim had a chance to shoot 59, came up just inches short on that one, burned the lip. But I will say, you're going to look, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this. This week's all about the bubble, not so much of the winner. Sammy Vailamaki ended up winning. That's awesome for him to get that first PGA Tour win. And we're going to talk about the bubble. And I know, I'm feeling your take is going to be disappointment because no one actually played their way in or out of that top 100. However, I will still go back to, and we like to do things based on what happened Sunday. I'm going to pull back the clock a little bit and say what happened Friday is a best example of what this event has become. And last year, it was Joel Damon who fought all week long to hang on to that 124 spot. This time around, it was Justin Lauer. He was outside the bubble. He was 114th to start the weekend. And anyone who hasn't listened to that interview, just go to Google. Look it up. Listen to what he has to say because it was emotional and it was raw. And it was talking about the journey that he's been on. And he's given it everything that he's got in his heart. And he has no idea what's next for him. I think that's a perfect example of why this event is different than any other tour event.
Yeah, it's the one tournament a year where I think there's 2 days that are equally important. And that's not to take anything away from Sammy Vailamaki. He's been knocking on the door the past couple of years on the PGA Tour. He's the winner of the season finale on the PGA Tour. And to your point, even though no players actually moved from outside the top 100, which is the new benchmark for full-time PGA Tour status, to inside that top 100, I actually think it was a pretty interesting day because it centered around two protagonists. The first one, which you interviewed, was Ricky Castillo, a player who, by his own measure, has had a really disappointing season. He was 135th in points heading into the RSM. He has missed 8 cuts this season, Rex, by a single shot, which sort of underscores the point of how thin the margins actually are on the PGA Tour. What he did on Sunday was must-see TV. He was playing the round of his life. Quite literally, that was the round of his PGA Tour career. He shot a final round 62. And when Ricky Castillo walked off the golf course, he was 95th in the projected FedEx Cup standings. Had things stayed in that manner, he would have been a full-time PGA Tour player. Instead, he gets bumped out by a player in Max McGreevy, who had already locked up his PGA Tour status. He was 89th, I believe, heading into the week. He improved that, obviously, heading into the 2026 season. So the PGA Tour season, Rex, really came down to, for these two players, they were totally incongruous. They had no bearing. They very likely did not even play with each other in 2025. But what one player did in 2025 directly affected what another player is going to be doing in 2026. That's why it's a really fun and interesting tournament to cover. I think it's a difficult tournament to cover because you don't know exactly who are going to be the stars. But the way and the manner in which it unfolds, to me, is like competitive golf at its finest. This is what you want if you are a viewer. Real consequences, real stakes. That was the RSM Classic. Ricky Castillo and Lee Hodges was really the same way.
You're right. Ricky was fascinating. 7 under through 9 holes, gets off to such a fast start. And he knew he was 6 back to start the day, had an idea of what he needed to do to crack that top 100 and get his fully exempt status. And I just started scribbling notes as he got to the back 9. Through 13 holes, he was 99th on the points list, just clinging to that last spot. Through 14 holes, he's outside the top 100 because of some things he did and some things some other people did. Through 15, he made a birdie there, got to 85th, and it kept bouncing around the entire time. I will say, interviewing him, I had a chance to talk with him actually before we did that interview during the broadcast, and I was amazed how calm he actually was, because it does, when you get to that point, I think, and as I said, 7 under through 9. So this literally came down to 9 holes to sort of decide your season. There is an epiphany that comes with that. The idea that, look, man, either I'm going to get it done or I'm not. Like, I can only beat myself up so much. And it was kind of fun. Like, that was one of my questions to him. Do you enjoy the idea of forget it. I'm just going to go out and try to play as hard as I possibly can. I had a conversation with Joel Damon, who was in a similar position that he was last year. And we all remember how emotional and how tore up he was, just barely making the cut last year and then ended up finishing 35th. Much different scenario this time around. Just had a baby last week with his wife. They had their second child, a little boy named Dawson. Didn't even play Bermuda. He knew this week it was different. It wasn't about defending. He had to go out there and get it. He had to do something special. So it is funny to see the different attitudes, the different emotions that this elicits. The other person that I would say that I really kept an eye on all week long was Sam Ryder, because you and I have talked about him.
Longwood, stand up.
That's right. And my dentist. Thank you, Doc Ryder, for taking good care of my teeth. I will say he is the epitome of what I think the new reality is, because he has been fully exempt for 7 years, which is an accomplishment. I think we gloss over that. We skip past that sometimes, and I don't think it's fair. For six of those 7 years, he has resided between 101 and 125. That's been where he lives, and we've never raised an eyebrow. That's fully exempt. We've always thought that, yep, that's good enough. This time around, it wasn't. He finished 101 to 125, and it's not good enough. He won't have full status next year. And not to get too inside baseball, but we also sort of had the other race that went from 101 to 110. That's going to be a separate category. Those players are probably going to get quite a few starts, to be honest with you. Outside of the Players' Championship, they'll probably get 20, maybe even 25 starts next year. So what I sort of drilled down on this afternoon was the difference between the guy that finished 110 and the guy that finished 111 could be the difference of 10 starts. That's huge.
It certainly is huge, which is why I wanted to ask you about the bubble guy particular in Lee Hodges. So Lee Hodges was 122nd heading into the season finale. And earlier in the week, he said that he had, quote, no pity for the players like himself who were in that position. Basically, you had the entire year to play better golf, to finish among the top 100 and have fully exempt status, and you did not do it. And so Lee Hodges did not have any pity for himself and did not have any pity for those players. Now, he did narrowly miss out, did Lee Hodges. He missed about a 10-footer on the 72nd hole, which would have been the difference between finishing inside the top 100 and being a fully exempt member and not. But I am curious. You're in the scoring area. You're in the scrum area. Like, what is the level of devastation? Do you compare it to the level of devastation for those players who don't make the FedEx Cup playoffs? Do you compare it to the devastation for the players who do not advance to the BMW Championship and thus be qualified for the signature events the following year? Do you compare it to the players who miss out on Q school? You and I have covered a number of Q schools. That is the real cut and dry, you either make it or you don't, cutthroat nature of competitive golf. Where do you draw the line? How do you compare what happens at the RSM to those other sort of make or break points?
I would go the opposite way on this and say you can only want something so much. That's the cliche we hear all the time on the PGA Tour when a guy gets into contention at a major or for his first win on the PGA Tour. This time around, you can only not want something so bad. I think it's a bit of a wash when you start talking about, you're right, it's varying degrees. And I think the part that struck me when you asked about the vibe that was in scoring, and you're absolutely right, it's not only Sunday afternoon, but it was Friday afternoon, and maybe even more so for a lot of reasons on Friday afternoon. But when you look at players trying to figure out the math, I think it's the uncertainty that scares most of them. Certainly that was the case with Justin Lauer. I did a report earlier in the week where I talked to a couple of different players. Bo Hostler was one of the players I talked about. And it's not so much that you're regretting being in this decision. It's not so much that you wish you could have played just a little bit better in June so you don't have to deal with this. It's you really have no idea. I just mentioned it's going to be so different between 110 and 111. But even if you're 110, you are probably a little confident going into next year that you'll get enough starts to actually have a chance to keep your tour card, but you're not sure. And if you're outside that, I mean, let's say you finish that 124th number somewhere in that category, you have absolutely no idea. You're going to get reshuffled. You're going to have to sit around and wait to see what events you're in and what events you're not in. You're clearly not going to be in the important events, the majors, the players, the signature events. So even when you do get a chance to play, if you don't play well, you know, you're just falling further and further behind. I would say this year more than any other, and this even compares to the Q schools I've covered in the past, it was a very hard reality that hit down on everyone.
Very interesting point. Bo Hostler, Matt Kuchar, among the players who have lost full-time status on the PGA Tour. Some of the other big names who, if you're scrolling down the FedEx Cup standings, are probably going to stand out. Players like a Max Homa, Tom Kim, Adam Scott, Nick Dunlap, Sahith Theegala, Will Zalatoris, all of those players are either exempt or have major medicals to fall back on in 2026. So I think that's important to point out. You mentioned also, Rex, you know, the 101 to 110, the 111 to 125. Outside the top 125, you're either going to the Corn Ferry Tour, you could potentially go to Q School and earn your PGA Tour card back that way. There was one other checkpoint that actually does matter, and that was the 51 to 60, which gets you into the first two signature events of a 2026 schedule. A notable name who fell outside that top 60, Rex, Jordan Spieth, who fell from 58 to 62. Why is that important? That, as of right now, keeps him out of the first two signature events in 2026. Would have to rely on sponsor exemptions if he does not play well in the early part of the 2026 season. That, of course, could be a bad look since he did not play tournament golf in the fall. Any thoughts on that?
And you and I have touched on this before, and I was talking with one tour player about this, and they pointed out really, really quickly that Jordan Spieth's main sponsor is AT&T. So he's getting into Pebble Beach. And I agreed with that. And it doesn't seem likely at all that he's not getting into Genesis. Tiger Woods is the host there. He clearly has a good relationship. He's going to get in there as well. I agree with both of those things. I just think it's an incredibly poor look for Jordan Spieth. And the part that I wrestle with a little bit is the conversation he had with our very own Damon Hack last week, where he was working on things. He was trying to get healthy. He was trying to be around his family. He had a lot of things going on off the golf course, which is more than fair. These guys play all year long. They play a really grueling schedule. It's only going to become more grueling next year. You deserve the time off, but it is tough when you're in that category and you didn't play once in the fall. You didn't even give it one shot. You didn't go to Mexico, of all places. Cabo, it's pretty nice this time of year. From what I hear, you didn't go to Napa. Again, really nice. I just don't understand why he made the choice. Not even if all he needed to do was make one cut and he would have finished in that category and he wouldn't even be in this conversation, because I'm tired of talking about it. You're tired of talking about the idea of sponsor exemptions and why these exemptions into these big events, the signature events, always seem to go to the four or five or six different players. No one wants to hear it anymore, but it's going to become an issue next year when there's going to be a guy that's watching that field and knows that Jordan Spieth got in because he was on a sponsor exemption and he could have made the least amount of effort and not taken that spot.
Yeah, and there's something to be said. If you listen to that interview with Damon Hack, he's clearly confident heading into 2026. He saw enough good signs with sort of a recovering, recuperating body to think that he could have a bounce back year in 2026 when he hits the ground running for the first start of the year at the Sony Open. But I'm with you. Everyone knows that it was a talking point and has been a talking point ever since the Signature Event Series was unveiled. The idea of having this merit on the PGA Tour, I was almost going to get it.
No, you got it.
I eventually pivoted and wanted to call an audible. You have this meritocracy with the PGA Tour, and yet you still have these handouts into the biggest money, biggest career-changing events. It doesn't make sense. I wish the PGA Tour would do away with them. They are not. They have not. And so this is the predicament we're in. Big picture, though, Rex, like, what do you think of this PGA Tour season? I think it's a really interesting exercise in trying to evaluate, because the new CEO of the PGA Tour, Brian Rolapp, says how strong the PGA Tour product is. He says how much momentum the PGA Tour product has. And yet, at the Tour Championship, the final event of the regular season, he was essentially promising monumental seismic changes to the PGA Tour. And a golf outsider was brought in to do those sorts of things. So I guess two things can be true at the same time. You can have a product that is back on the upswing and sort of has stiff-armed or given LIV Golf the Heisman, but you can also have a product that is ripe for some pretty significant changes. Big picture, zooming out, where do you see with the PGA Tour right now?
It was interesting last week because Harris English was kind of asked a question that really wasn't about this, and he immediately made the jump to the idea of how you and I both have talked about 2026 being a transition year and 2027. There is a lot of feeling, there's a lot of ideas that that's going to be a vastly different look for the PGA Tour. We're talking about a really condensed schedule, just top events in the biggest markets with the best players, and we're not going to have a 40-something event schedule anymore. I imagine something closer to 20, 25 events is what we would be looking at. This goes back to something that you and I have talked about in the past. I think that's where Brian Rolapp wants to go. He hasn't voiced that, and I think there's only a handful of people who are actually in that room, the Future Competitions Committee room, who know for sure. but he probably can't do it before 2027. He probably can't do it before 2030, to be honest with you. This goes back to the blank piece of paper comment. I remember showing a member of the policy board a few years ago a blank piece of paper and give me the best 25 events. And he shoved it back to me and said, yeah, that's great. We don't have a blank piece of paper. There are so many contracts and so many obligations and so many media partners.
The legal fees will be outstanding if that's the plan pushed forward for 2027.
And the one thing that we do know about SSG, we don't know a lot, but the one thing we do know is they don't like to give back money. So more than likely, the PGA Tour is going to let this schedule play out pretty much the way it is, at least through 2030. And then they start making monumental changes. Then you do have something close to that blank piece of paper where you do can decide, okay, these are the events that we want to focus on and maximize. Scarcity is the whole point of the idea of getting the best players together more often. You're not going to do that with a 45 event schedule.
How do you think, how many calls do you think Brian Rolapp received on Wednesday afternoon after that press conference with Harris English, who, if you did not see, essentially suggested the PGA Tour would be starting after the NFL season ends. It would be, you could either view it as eliminating the signature events or expanding them to basically just make a entire schedule of signature events, talking about the fall and what could potentially happen there as well. That, I don't think that was a trial balloon. I think that was just Harris English answering a question really honestly, like, oh yeah, here's what I heard. Let's just keep it among friends. And obviously it blows up and it goes on social media. I don't think like the PGA Tour was ready. And so it's really hard to actually look at this seriously and genuinely, because this was just one of the ideas. The Future Competitions Committee, I believe, has only met once at this point, and there's a handful of players who are on there: Tiger Woods, Patrick Cantlay, Adam Scott, Keith Mitchell, Maverick McNeely, Camilo Vijegas. Like, those are the players who are in the room. It is far from a done deal, but I cannot imagine that went over pretty well at PGA Tour HQ.
I was told by someone, and this is going to be hard for me to say because Harris English went to Georgia, and you know I can't talk much about Bulldogs because you take offense to it very, very quickly. I was told by a tour official that, no disrespect to Harris English, but there's probably no one on the planet who is less qualified to talk about the future of the PGA Tour. And that's, again, I'm not being mean to Harris English or any other player. It's what they do. They talk about it. It's their tour. It's their future. I understand why they have sort of a vague interest. I think by and large, tour players are very insular people because they want to do one thing really, really well. That doesn't leave a lot of time to sit around and gossip about other things. So he has probably heard a handful of things in passing, whether that's on the in the locker room or listening to you and I's podcast. And he's put them together, and this is what he imagines would happen. So I'm not quite sure many alarm bells went off in Ponte Vedra Beach, because the way things stand right now, we're going to see the status quo, at least for the foreseeable future. And yes, there is monumental change coming to the tour, but it's not coming anytime soon. And I'm not even quite sure that Harris even had the particulars correct, because I don't know that the PGA Tour is that worried about the Super Bowl, because if Phoenix has taught us anything, it's you can build a tournament, a pretty fun tournament, around the Super Bowl. So I don't even know if that's an issue.
Yeah, I think the general idea of delaying the PGA Tour season is probably one that they should look at. And even if Harris was not exactly correct, it does at least hint at what Brian Rolapp had said at the Tour Championship in Eastlake with the three principles that he is going to be doling out, not just in 2026, but beyond. That's scarcity, that's parity, and that's simplicity. Simplicity, I think, sort of reared its ugly head at the RSM Classic. Folks like you and I loved it. If you're really into the game, if you're really following the entire FedEx Cup fall and the FedEx Cup race for the top 100, you probably loved what happened on Sunday. If you were a novice or you had just tuned in to take a break from football, you were probably very, very confused about how Max McGreevy's 30-foot putt on 18, how that directly affected what Ricky Castillo did for the entirety of the 2025 season. And so Brian Rolapp's idea of simplicity for the entire FedEx Cup season, the entire conclusion to the FedEx Cup season, making sure that the season-long champion is crowned in a compelling, a consistent, but also a pretty concise way at Eastlake is certainly one of his priorities. Parity, we saw that happen in the fall, didn't we, Rex, with the inclusion and addition of a player like Michael Brennan, looks like a potential future star, making sure that those pathways are clear. But scarcity still is the most interesting one. And if Brian Rolapp's saying it and Harris English is sort of illuminating that idea as well, that to me is the one that still has the most traction. And I think that's certainly the one that's going to cause and create the most eyeballs.
And it's going to cause the most anxiety among not just players, but tournaments and tournament sponsors and tournament organizers. And you understand where the anxiety is coming from. Like, it's if you're looking at yourself in the mirror and thinking to yourself, yep, I'm about to be scarcity, because that's a key characteristic. That's what Brian Rollup call it. So, yes, I'm going to be a little concerned about that. I will say, and you're absolutely right, I was on the call, so I was probably listening a little bit more intently than your average golf fan. And there was a couple of times when I was trying to connect some dots. There was a moment with Doug Gim on the 18th hole where he needed a birdie putt to get inside, but he still needed some help. And it is difficult, and it's hard to connect those dots just with the way the math adds up. I would counter and say most of the events in the fall, this one included, probably more so, it's not going to pull in outside eyeballs. These are probably pretty passionate fans if you're going to tune in on an NFL Sunday. I think that's just or week 12, I think, in college football. Like, there's too many other things going on, to be quite frank with you. The counter to that is, I do think the tour, and to pat Golf Channel on the back a little bit, have come a long way since Steve Sands standing at the whiteboard at Eastlake. Like, I do think you can paint a little better picture when it comes to exactly what's happening, even if your average sports fan isn't going to get it.
Give me a double box, give me a quad box, give me an octo box on RSM Sunday. I would absolutely love that. Just to put a fine point on this and put a bow on the PGA Tour season, Rex, what is like your biggest outstanding question? Because is it, you know, the product getting so optimized that it just feels like a super league for investors? Is it the, you know, if we go in this direction of having a limited number of events, a Rory Scotty showdown doesn't slap as hard as it potentially could? Is it, how do you incorporate some of the best international events in the DP World Tour into the schedule? Is it what you're going to do with the fall? What is your biggest question moving forward with the PGA Tour?
I mean, I think when you talk about scarcity, yes, how are you going to incorporate those biggest events? If we do come up with a 25 event schedule, and I'm just pulling that number, that is not a real number. I'm not pulling a Harris English now. I don't know if that's going to be the number or not. But if that's the number that we're going to settle on, then what are those exactly going to be, those 25 events? We can work our way backwards. I did that actually with a couple of players this week at Sea Island Resorts, because you start at the majors and the Players Championship, and then you start picking really good events, but you get to 25 really quickly. When I think back to this season, when I'm not trying to project forward, I will say the parity is there. Like, I will say that the Future Competitions Committee doesn't have to do a lot of thinking on that one, because you and I are going to have a podcast in a few weeks talking about players of the year and accolades of the year. And it's really easy to say Scottie Scheffler is the player of the year, but I think we would both agree Rory McIlroy has made an argument that even though he didn't accomplish as much as Scottie did, I think if you take everything that Rory's done around the globe and you stack it up, it's been a pretty fun year. You mentioned Michael Brennan. I think that is the definition a parody right there. When you have a guy that didn't have a pathway and essentially just stumbled his way in to a start and ended up winning. And I mean, it is a business, and we have seen what the ratings are, and we've seen how quickly sponsors are replaced. Like, it's a lot. I am amazed sometimes how many times we sit around, we being the rural, we went in the media and talk about this sponsor or that sponsor who isn't happy and they're leaving, and you sort of wait for the shoe to drop, and there's always another sponsor that seems to want to step in. So to Brian Rollup's point, it's a really successful business. And going forward, you need to tread carefully, because you don't want to stomp on something that's going well.
We're going to dive deeper into that business, into the PGA Tour product on the other side of this short break. PGA Tour superlatives, award winners, not just for the best player, but the best tournament, best round, best moment, etc. We'll see you after this break. All right, Rex, let's get into some superlatives for the 2025 PGA Tour season. A couple of notes here. The majors are excluded. We're going to get into that in 2 weeks for our season ending show. We're also skipping top player, because the top player on the PGA Tour was Scottie Scheffler. You could quibble with best worldwide player. You could look, and I probably will, at best player for a different answer in a couple weeks' time. But look, Scottie Scheffler was the PGA Tour Player of the Year. He is going to be voted as such. 6 wins, 7th best season of the adjusted strokes gained era. Even better than 2024. He was that dude. So with that in mind, let's go a couple of different topics, a couple of different categories. Let's start with best newcomer on the PGA Tour. Who was it for you?
It's Ben Griffin, and I don't even know if that qualifies. I think I
should
ask you exactly what qualifies as a best newcomer. However, he had not won before this season, and the reason I say that, and I go back to last fall, I've used this as a sort of example of what it means to get inside. We talked about that 51 to 60 category, and Ben did that last year. So he got into those first two signature events of this season, and he was really able to turn that into a career year. He ended up winning three times on the PGA Tour. I would argue he was one of two highlights for the U.S. team at the Ryder Cup. And I think he became a legitimate superstar, which he wasn't before this year. So he would be mine.
In what world is Ben Griffin a newcomer? A newcomer to like the world stage?
He was selling mortgages 3 years ago. Again, I still love the idea that someone's sitting around being like, sweetie, did he sell us our mortgage?
I'm with you. I actually thought that I was cheating with my answer to this question. Then you went with Ben Griffin, which just completely blows my mind. But I'm going with Jackson Quaven, who is right now does not actually have a PGA Tour card in his hand. He is still competing in college. He is a junior at Auburn, but he has locked up a future PGA Tour card whenever he chooses to accept it through the PGA Tour's University Accelerated program. He has deferred it until at least after this season. But you look at what he did, Rex, in seven official World Golf Ranking recognized events this year, four consecutive top 11s. He is such a good player already in the limited action that we have seen. And look, maybe things are going to be different when he actually joins the pay for play set. We've seen what happened with Luke Clanton. Remember 2024? Like, Luke Clanton had a dominant summer as well. Everything was projected quite high for him. Similar run. I don't think Jackson Quaven is quite as much as a boom bust project as Luke Clanton is. Whenever Jackson Quaven joins the PGA Tour, he is instantly going to be among the very best putters on the PGA Tour. That club has never let him down. Look forward to seeing what Jackson Quaven can do in 2026. How about this one? After you just went with Ben Griffin for best newcomer, I can't wait to see where you go with biggest breakout, because I probably could be Ben Griffin as well.
Could have been Ben Griffin, and I kind of toyed with the idea. I ended up going with JJ Spahn just because of what he did at the Players' Championship, going head-to-head with Rory. And this was a guy, again, going back to last fall, didn't even know if he was going to keep playing. Didn't know if he was going to have a job this year. Didn't know if he was going to be able to keep being on the PGA Tour. Ends up at the Players' Championship. And loses to Rory on a Monday, but I think he proved a lot to himself. And then, of course, what happened at the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup.
Like that one. I'll have JJ Spahn later on in this segment. For me, the biggest breakout was Tommy Fleetwood. He is no longer just that like lovable loser character. Yes, this was a player who had won seven times in Europe, but never in the United States. There always seemed to be, Rex, over the past decade, like a softness about him. You think back of what happened at the Travelers Championship. Two bogeys on the last three holes was nipped by the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, Keegan Bradley. A couple weeks later in Memphis at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, some game management mistakes late. He had, entering the Tour Championship, 43 top 10s without a victory. That was so many more than any other player. It was absolutely mind-boggling. And yet, even in the face of all that adversity, even in the face of all of that disappointment, he was always poised. He was always accountable. He was always introspective. He was always thoughtful. He became, in my opinion, this summer, one of the most popular players in the world, full stop. And I think you saw that outpouring of emotion, not just from Tommy Fleetwood, but from the golf world at large with what he did at the Tour Championship, followed up a couple months later, winning in India on the DP World Tour, a really strong end to the year. Now all he gets in 2026, now that he's among the top five players in the world ranking, is a home game for that Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. Very good for Tommy Ladd. How about best tournaments? You cover about, what, 20 of them, 20 to 25 of them throughout the PGA Tour year? Majors excluded, what was the best PGA Tour event of the year?
And Tommy is going to be part of this theme, because I'm going to go to the Tour Championship. And it seems in recent years, more times than not, we end up at the Tour Championship and we're more concerned about Rory or Scotty or whoever the dominant player was over the course of the season, because statistically everything seemed to lean towards them. Scotty Scheffler, to be fair, that sort of creates another category in and of itself. But there were so many storylines heading into Eastlake. And I think this year, more so than we've seen in past years, there were so many players that actually delivered on those storylines, that it just wasn't a Scottie Scheffler or Rory McIlroy running away with it. And the fact that it was Tommy that not only got that first victory, but did it in such style that you also got the FedEx Cup. I love the idea that when he finally got that long-awaited breakthrough, it came with a bonus of, I don't know, I'm going to get this wrong, $20 million, something along that line. So it's very impressive that he was able to do it. But I will give credit where credit is due. We talk about this all the time. The Tour Championship is in a weird time of year. There's a lot of people that constantly argue year in and year out that it's broken. It may not be perfect, but I always come back to the idea that you have gotten the top players together at a time of year that normally they would rather not be playing. And it's not quite head-to-head with football, but you're close enough that the shadow is there, and you've turned it into something that is at least semi-interesting.
Yeah, I like the Tour Championship. I thought this year it was disqualifying for best tournament just because that final hour was a little bit sleepy. It wasn't particularly dramatic, which for Tommy Fleetwood, I'm sure he did not mind after all of the drama he has had throughout his PGA Tour career. I wanted to go Memphis here. I wanted to go with the FedEx St. Jude Championship. I loved that tournament. To me, that was one of my favorites to watch. I cannot choose anything other than my hometown event, the Players' Championship. And keep in mind, this could have been a snoozer. If you think back to that Sunday at TPC Sawgrass, Rory McIlroy was up by three shots with six holes to play, ends up giving up down the stretch with a couple of bogeys, plus a surge from JJ Spahn. That was against, remember, all of the backdrop of his 2024 disappointments, including at the U.S. Open. Like, this was a classic quintessential, like, favorite underdog story. Rory McIlroy was sitting there with 27 wins. JJ Spahn had won just once. The second time that we had ever seen this playoff format at the Players' Championship, 16, 17, and 18. It's the best arena in all of tournament golf on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy essentially ended this golf tournament with one swing. That titanic draw over the trees on 16, driver pitching wedge with the wind absolutely whipping, brutally cold. JJ Spahn, what he says, some poor luck on 17. That golf tournament, that stage, obviously the field is the strongest of the entire PGA Tour schedule. I loved that tournament, and I thought that this was as good as it gets. The contenders, the golf course, the conditions, perfect storm, literally perfect golf tournament, the Players' Championship. Best round of golf on the PGA Tour. You can take this any number of ways. To you, what was it?
I went chalk, and you're probably not going to like this either, but Jake Knapp shot 59 at the Cognizant Classic, round one at PGA National. And it sounds like chalk, but it's really not, because every time I sit down at the end of the year, I do try to figure out who has the best round. And you can base it on which was the most exciting or which was the most consequential. And most of those come on Sunday. This was a Thursday round. This one was the best because statistically, when it comes to the rest of the field, it was almost 10 shots better than the scoring average that day. That by far is the best round of the year.
Okay. From a statistical perspective, you are right there. I had a couple of honorable mentions that I wanted to get to. I wanted to get to Thomas Dietrich's closing 66 in Phoenix. Remember, he birdied the last four holes at TPC Scottsdale to nail down his first PGA Tour victory. I wanted to go with Rory's third round 65 at Pebble Beach in what was absolutely horrific conditions. But if you remember, Shane Lowry shot the exact same score, so I just can't give it to Rory McIlroy. I wanted to go with Victor Hovland's final round 67 at the Valspar Championship when he did not know if he was going to find the center of the club face the entire day. Remarkable that Victor Hovland in that state won a PGA Tour event. I wanted to go with Chris Goddard staring down Rory McIlroy in Scotland head-to-head to win that golf tournament as well. Instead, I went a little bit chalky, keeping with the theme at the Players' Championship. It's Justin Thomas's course record tying 62. And the reason why I think that was so impactful, not just because what it represented against the field average, I believe is the second best round per strokes gained metrics, but it also came, Rex, after an opening 78. JT can run as hot as anybody. He made 11 birdies in that second round. You and I were both photographed out there in that right rough on 18. We wanted to see history. We wanted to see a 61 at TPC Sawgrass. Instead, the rough along the right-hand side flipped his club over, went to the water, actually did well to get up and down for a bogey to shoot 62. That was, in my opinion, the best golf that was played this year. It didn't end up mattering. Like, JT ended up tying for 33rd in the golf tournament, but just a reminder of how special of a talent he is to be able to run up the score as he did that day at TPC Sawgrass. All right. How about the biggest surprise of the 2025 PGA Tour season?
You have to get out to more events. You can't keep picking your hometown event for these accolades. Just because you don't get out to more events. Just because you don't get out for more events, you have to. Well, it's the only one I saw, so it must be. That's got to be it. All right,
it was special.
It was very special. The biggest surprise was there's no deal between the PGA Tour and the public investment of Saudi Arabia. That's going out of left field a little bit. But the reason why is not one, but two trips to the White House to try to get this done. You had the president of the United States trying to broker a deal. You had everyone involved thinking that there was going to be some sort of deal. And not only did they not reach a deal, not only did we not get to a point where golf was finally reunited and we don't have this separation, this gulf, this distraction that has been haunting the game for 4 years, but by all accounts, they haven't even spoken since that second meeting in the White House. That is a huge surprise. I could have seen them not coming to a deal where there was just some sort of impasse, but they kept having conversations. I could have seen it going the other way, where they started yelling at each other and there was more lawsuits. But neither one of those two extremes happened. Instead, they just picked up their balls and they went home. That, to me, makes no sense when everything was on the line.
That's a great answer. So grave an answer that I wish I'd come up with it myself. Do you think that Tiger Woods interview in the CBS booth at Torrey Pines, which was the host site this year for the Genesis Invitational, where Tiger Woods sat there, he said, "Oh yeah, we're coming to a deal. We're doing this for golf fans. This is what golf fans have been asking for: reunification, all the best players back together under one roof." Has that like been scrubbed for the internet? Like I have not seen any footage of that over the past 8 months, and for good reason. Great answer. I'm with you. Like a complete U-turn, about face, stunner that what the messaging was and what the end result was could not be further from the truth. Biggest surprise for me, I'll stick with the player theme. You already mentioned it, but JJ Spahn. Because he was a player, Rex, who I love this story. And if you are the PGA Tour, and we talked about Brian Rolapp and parity and trying to nail down, making sure the pathways are right, making sure there's still opportunities for players to alter their career trajectories. Here was a player, Rex, who is a former college walk-on who last summer thought that his PGA Tour career was over. He was well outside the number, the top 125 in FedEx Cup points. He was talking about contentment. He was talking about how much money he'd made. He's talking about how many friends that he'd made along the way. Like he was already thinking about his next career and moving on. All he does late last summer was rally and do enough to keep his PGA Tour card. The calendar turns and he has the best year of his career by far. He nearly wins the Sony. He nearly wins in Palm Beach. He loses in a playoff, as I mentioned, at TPC Sawgrass for the Players' Championship. Then he wins the U.S. Open. I know this is a PGA Tour show, but he won the U.S. Open. He nearly won Memphis in the FedEx Cup opener. He makes the Ryder Cup team all the way up to number 6 in the world ranking. Here is a player. We are not doing a most improved section, but if we did, JJ Spahn has to be among the most improved, not just with his driving, but also his putting. And I think even bigger, like mentally, he now has the self-belief that he can do it and the fearlessness that has really not defined his career. If you go back to that Players' Championship and JJ Spahn in the media center talking about he's never been at a time in his career where he really wanted the ball, where it was late and he thought that he could own up to that moment and be that guy in the arena. That has completely changed based on what's happened in 2025. You loved to see of a player at sort of his advanced age in his mid-30s alter his career trajectory in such a meaningful way. All right, last topic. We can't all be positive, Rex. How about negatively? The biggest disappointment for you in 2025 on the PGA Tour was whom or what?
And to be completely fair, this is through no fault of his own. I want to start out with that in all caps.
Ooh, that's a fun caveat.
That's right. Through no fault of his own, Will Zalatoris. And look, this was when he had his first microdiscectomy. You and I actually debated about the proper way of pronouncing that. I think you might have gotten it, but I'm going to go with microdiscectomy. When he had that first
absolutely
one,
not. Microdiscectomy.
Okay, that thing. When he had that in spring of 2023, it was disappointing because he was on such a trajectory that you thought he is going to be a superstar. He has the talent, he has the personality, he has the drive, and he's already closed out a big event in Memphis. When he came back, I think both you and I were a little giddy about the idea that he was finally healthy. He was going to pick up where he left off. He was going to be this special player to have a second one. And maybe he does come out the other end. You and I both have spoke with people inside his camp, and there's a level of optimism. But the expectations were so high that this superstar that the game desperately needs, they need more new faces to come along that not only play golf well, that's great. I love watching talented players get out and do what they do best, perfect their craft. But he also has the personality. He has the drive. He's fun to be around. And for that to sort of come screeching to a halt again was very disappointing.
It's easy to overlook just where Will Zalatoris was in summer 2022. He was a player who had just won in Memphis. At that time, he was number one in the FedEx Cup rankings, looking at potentially getting a $25 million bonus. He was going to be playing on his very first President's Cup team. He was a player who had just notched his first win after a number of close calls, not just in PGA Tour events, but in major championships as well. Then he had the injury in Delaware, and it's just been a really hard battle ever since. I'm with you. Like, I think Will Zalatoris a couple years ago had future world number one potential. He still might. He still might play on Ryder Cups and President's Cups, but there at least has now been sown a little bit of doubt in his future just because his body has not cooperated. Probably needs to make some swing compensations. Hopefully he can stay healthy in 2026 because he is such an immense talent and a great potential addition. I'm with you, just as a spokesperson, an ambassador for the PGA Tour in Will Zalatoris. Another player who was dogged by injury in 2025, unexpectedly to me, was Xander Schauffele. And I know Xander Schauffele won in Japan at the tail end of the PGA Tour season. We didn't know when we were doing our season preview edition, Rex, at the beginning of 2025, that Xander Schauffele was dealing with this rib injury that eventually cost him about 2 months. And he comes back essentially at basically the hardest part that you possibly can. He returned to the Arnold Palmer Invitational for just a gauntlet of tournaments. Luckily, he did not suffer any setbacks. He did not have any other health issues for the rest of the year, but he always seemed like he was playing catch up. It always seemed like he was trying to log enough reps to get sharp. And sure, he still mustered enough decent finishes to finish among the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings, right? Like, he had a good week at the Open. He had a good week in the Masters as well. He was able to do it, which I think just shows the class that he has. He was able to do it in the biggest tournaments against the best fields in the toughest conditions. Like, that is the caliber of player that Xander Schauffele is. But even though he won in the fall in Japan, it had to have been a massively disappointing season for a player who is coming off a year in 2024 where he'd finally checked off nearly all of his career achievements. Halfway to the career Grand Slam, he'd already had great finishes in the other two majors that he was looking for. The completeness of his game, he was the only player on the PGA Tour in 2024 who was top 40 in every major statistical category, took big steps back with his golf swing, particularly off the tee. Took big steps back on the greens as well with his putting. Disappointing year for Xander Schauffele. That win in Japan probably doesn't have quite the tinge of sadness or regret or disappointment that he might have had otherwise. I still think the arrow was pointed up on the X-Man for 2026 and looking forward to seeing what he can do. All right, that's it for the PGA Tour superlatives. On the other side of this short break, a couple of punch shots. Rory McIlroy, Nelly Korda going winless. Gino Tinnicle basically sweeping all the LPGA's awards. An AK sighting. And yes, what is going to be on the grill for Thanksgiving? You are not going to want to miss this. Stick around. All right, Rex, let's get out of here with some odds and ends, which apparently producer Fred is now calling what was originally called our punch shots.
Punch shots.
In any case, Rory McIlroy. In a storyline that we did not get into on the midweek episode, won his seventh Race to Dubai title on the DP World Tour. This is a big deal to you?
It's a huge deal. I think when you look back on this season, you can write an entire book on Rory McIlroy, and it's just not going to be about the Masters. Clearly, that's going to be the hook. That's what you're going to talk about the most, reaching the top of the mountain, finally winning it after all of those tries, getting the career Grand Slam, all of the things we've talked about. But the fact he was able to lock back in when it mattered the most, because there was probably a month, maybe even 2 months, when you and I sat on this very podcast and talked about Rory's probably mailing it in a little bit. And justifiably,
he's not talking to us. Remember when he wasn't talking to us?
He wasn't talking to us. He didn't seem to be very interested. At the PGA Championship, he was mad that his driver got tested and deemed non-conforming. You can keep going on and on. There was a window in the middle of the year where you thought to yourself, yeah, maybe Rory is kind of checked out a little bit. Not even blaming him. You get to the top of the mountain. We've had this discussion before. Can't imagine what that must have felt like when you get there and you start looking around thinking, what's next? And he had plenty to do next. The idea that he wanted to get to the Ryder Cup and just not play well, just not win it, but become the face of this defiant European team against an onslaught of just awful behavior. New York fans at New York fans' worst, and he faced them down and did what he did when he's playing his best golf. And then he goes to Europe, and he performs even better, and he continues to rise. He continues to shine where it matters to him the most. You don't have to read too far between the lines when you hear him talk about the things that are important to him going forward. And one of those things is the DP World Tour and that dedication to this tour that this is where I started my career, and this is a thing that I'm going to support as I'm in the later years of my career, and my spot and my stardom is at its absolute best. And to hear him talk about winning that seventh, essentially order of merit title, the season-long points race, what it means to him in the context of comparing it to Seve Ballesteros, looking at Colin Morikawa, I'm coming for you, I'm coming to get your stuff. That's the motivation that was hard to wrap your mind around after that Sunday at Augusta National, because it was such a relief, because all of these things were off his shoulder. It has been an amazing season. And again, we touched on it earlier in the show, and we're going to probably talk about it later in the year. The Golf Writers Association of America have their player of the year. And my argument is, when it comes to that vote, that that's based on what you do around the globe. And I think you can make a really good argument that he should be that person.
Yeah, statistically, Rory McIlroy was not the best player. That was Scottie Scheffler, and it was Scottie Scheffler pretty decisively. But if you're looking from like a personal satisfaction way of thinking, or if you're looking at it from a historic or a legendary performance, like that was Rory McIlroy's 2025. And so I do think that this seventh order of merit title was significant. It now puts him just one away from matching Colin Montgomery entering what will be Rory McIlroy's age 37 season. It certainly seems like a matter of when, not if, he'll overtake Monty, especially now, as you mentioned, that he's leaning into it and wanting to play more events on the European Tour, how he feels at home playing and supporting, because that's where he wants to be. And Rory McIlroy, at this stage of his career, now that he has become the sixth player to complete the career Grand Slam, he needs these different types of incentives, these different types of goals. It's how he can continue to maximize and extend this athletic prime that he is enjoying right now. If that happens, he wasn't mentioning the FedEx Cup title and how he wants to add a fourth one of those. He wants to become the greatest and the winningest European player ever. He could do so by not just matching Monty, but extending that title over him over the next couple of years. Switching gears to the ladies and the LPGA, Gino Tittical, a dominant performance of the CME Group Tour Championship, winning that golf tournament. A player, Rex, who did not win, sort of unfathomably in 2025, was Nelly Korda, going winless this season after a 7-win campaign in 2024. You're more surprised by Gino's dominance or Nelly's offer?
Nelly's offer, because Gino had been dominant last year. We saw this coming. She has been a dominant player for a long time. I don't want to skip past her greatness of this season, though. The one I want to focus on, and Brandel Chamblee talked about it today on the pregame show, is a new scoring average. She essentially set a new benchmark at 68.697 now, and that's about a quarter of a stroke better than the mark that was set by Annika. And Annika is pretty much the standard when it comes to that sport, at least when you start talking about that. So what player of the year, won three times, the VAR trophy, all of those things are so wildly impressive. But I was fascinated by the idea, and I've listened to a couple of the press conferences this week, and Nelly Korda's take is one that I think deserves a larger conversation, that greatness is not linear. If you look at the difference between statistically this year and last year, really the only area that she was off is around the greens. Everything else was pretty much locked in to what she was last year. And to hear her explain it, look, it's just a bounce here and there. Like, that's really basically the difference. And I do think that when you look at a season like what Scottie had, when you look at all of those seasons that Tiger Woods had, that they continue to pile them up, and you sort of discount the idea that maybe they don't get the bounces this year. Nelly is a perfect example of, she is the exact same player almost, at least statistically, that she was last year. Things just didn't go her way this time around. And I do think there's also something to be said, and I think the desk in the pregame show did a great job of talking about this this week. We talked about parity on the PGA Tour. I think parity on the LPGA Tour is an even bigger conversation because that probably took away as well. It was subtraction by addition.
Yeah, I mean, there was nearly 30 different winners on the LPGA, and Nelly Korda was not one of them. And I think your Scotty comparison is apropos because it does show some level of variance at the top level. Where if you look back, remember Scotty Scheffler's 2023, what was the difference between him winning twice in 2023 and winning nine times worldwide in 2024? If you hear Scotty, it was, you know, I shot 64 in the final round and I got enough breaks where the guys who were in front of me, you know, missed some putts and it just sort of worked out that way. I could see at least a market correction for Nelly Korda playing the way that she did. You mentioned her strokes game metrics. They were very similar year over year. Yes, Gino is an entirely different class right now. She's first in scoring, first in birdie average, first in bogey avoidance, first in strokes game total, first in putts per GIR. She is the best player by a mile on the LPGA. But that's not to say that Nelly Korda will not bounce back the next year with two or three victories. That's the variance on the LPGA and the top level. All right, we are running out of time, and so we want to get into this one, Rex, because it is Thanksgiving week, otherwise known as the greatest day on the calendar. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, and how?
I'm going to clear the stage for you on this one, because I think you clearly have some things you want to talk about on this one. We've mentioned this in the past. We go to New Orleans. My family does. It's a big family occasion. There's a bunch of different turkeys and a bunch of different foods. Like, it's not your normal Thanksgiving food, but it's 100-plus people. So that's what we do, and we look forward to it. The food is fantastic, but you ...
I'm tired, fam. You know that meme of the worker who's on the bench just like head in hands? We had our Friendsgiving of our Jags group here in Ponte Vedra a couple of days ago. I cooked for 20 people. I've never cooked for that many people in my life. I overextended myself because I didn't just smoke a whole turkey. Producer Fred, if you want to roll in that photo. Yes, this is me on my workhorse offset. That is a whole
what's the thing smoking on the right?
That is a ham, which I am twice smoking to impart some smoke flavor, as well as a glaze. Not pictured was four different turkey breasts that I also smoked, trying to hit each and every one of them at the ideal pull-off temperature of 155. I overextended myself. I will not do it again. And so for Thanksgiving, I'm taking it easy. Yes, I'm going to be pounding some beers. Yes, I'm going to be having a false spice old fashioned. But Rex, I'm just going to do a single spatchcock turkey on my Grilla Grill Silverback pellet grill. Nice and easy. An injection with Creole butter, spraying with duck fat, pulling when it hits 155 in the breast. It is my Super Bowl. It's the greatest day of the year. I hope you and yours have a great Thanksgiving as well. Quick shout out to our man, Dom, who's been helping on the show all year long. We're going to miss you, buddy. Thanks so much for all of your help. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back in a couple weeks for the season finale. Yes, set your DVRs, mark your calendars. It's going to be one you don't want.